Welcome to About Greyhounds, the podcast about greyhounds, except maybe today, where we are going to be talking about, I'll say, a cousin of the greyhounds, and that is a breed of dog called Galgos. With me on the show today is Thelma Shaw. Thelma is the founder of Galgo Podenco Support, which is a nonprofit in the United States. She started it back in May of 2014, so they are in year five now. And Thelma works very closely with rescues in Spain, saving, just what you think, Galgos and Podencos. They will be talking about Galgos. Once they're saved and in shelters in Spain, Thelma works on getting those dogs out of Spain and into the United States. Also on the show with us today is Ellen Ganopoulos.
Hello.
Who likes to interrupt. and who works very closely with Thelma and is coming up on her 25th and 26th. They're in close succession to each other. Transports from Spain to the U.S. So Ellen's a flight patron, working closely with Thelma, again, getting Galgos and Podencos out of Spain and into the United States for homing. So before we flip to Ellen, I am going to flip right over to Thelma. Thelma, welcome to the show. We are so excited that you're on today to tell this story to our audience. I was hoping that you could give us a little bit more of your backgrounds.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for having me today. I'm really thankful that I get a chance to maybe share a little bit, a little light about the Galgos and the Podencos. I thank you for having me on the show. So, my background, just so that you know who I am, I start off with greyhounds. I adopted my first greyhound back in 1993 or 4. He wasn't a track dog. He was an AKC greyhound. I had no idea the difference between track or AKC. He just came to me, and I adopted him as a puppy. And that led me to a greyhound rescue, which I was involved in for probably 10 years. I also was the president of Greyhound Connection in San Diego for a few years. But during that time, even before I started with Greyhound Connection, I had come across a website in Spain. It was all in Spanish. And I saw a picture. And that picture burned into my mind and into my heart. And that was the catalyst for the work that I've been doing for almost 15 years now. The picture was of a Galgo.
Thelma, I'm gonna ask you to pause 1 second. There's something I should have done at the start, and I didn't do it, so I'm going to do it now before we go any further. For everyone listening, this is a trigger warning. You are going to hear on this episode some stories of animal abuse, and of course, all of it heinous. So if this is something that you would prefer not to listen to, I will pause for a couple of seconds so that you can turn off the podcast. And then for everyone else, if you would like to listen and hear what's happening in Spain, please stay on and hear the story.
Okay, so I try not to linger on these things. I know it's upsetting to people and to myself. And my own Facebook page, I rarely put anything on that is, hard to look at. It's hard for me to look at it, so I don't do that. So,
right.
But I have to say that if you don't know what's happening, you're not going to be spurned to help.
Right.
So what I saw was a picture of a Galgo hanging from an olive tree, and of course he had died, and that shocked me. Of course, here we are, Greyhound Rescue. We love the dogs. What was this? How did this happen? Who did this? These are all the questions that flooded my mind. So I started doing some more research, and all the websites, like I said, were in Spanish. And at that time, I wasn't as fluent as I am now in Spanish. And so I had to read slowly, and it was just like a block just going on and on and on about all the mistreatment of the Galgos in Spain, the situation with the hunting federations in Spain, how many Galgos are bred every year to hunt, and then from those thousands, up to 50 to 100,000 Galgos are bred every year in Spain. Only a handful are kept for the next season.
Wow.
So, yeah. So when I got my head around all of that, I was like, oh my goodness. And then I found another website of a girl in Canada who was going to the first shelter I had ever heard about in Spain called Scooby Medina. And she was going over there and taking photographs of the dogs there. And it was really shocking to see like 300 to 500 Galgos, you know, in the shelter. And it was the dead of winter, it was cold, and you just, you know, envision them freezing and skinny and all of that. And so I thought to myself, what can I do to help? So I thought, okay, maybe I can make coats for them. I don't sew, but I can learn. So I went out and bought myself a sewing machine, and I cut a pattern on my greyhound, and I made it smaller, and I started talking to people, and I started making coats. And that's how I got involved. And then I found out that there was one group in the United States that was actually trying to help the Galgos in Spain. And so I got involved with them, and I was on the board for that group for 9 years before I started GPF in 2014.
So tell me, it sounds like this was probably at a time before there was social media. Is that right?
Yeah, there was no social media. All there was websites and telephones. So
the old-fashioned way.
We did have email. So yeah, it was really hard to post your stories and pictures and all of that. But even with the limited social media we had, we were able to group together a small group of people, and we started working to bring dogs from Scooby Medina to the United States. And I think I was probably the first person to bring up the Dinko to the United States. And so that was a long time ago. That was probably in 2004, 5, something like that.
Wow.
So from that, like I said, in 2014, I decided to forge forward with a new group. And the idea was the same, to raise awareness about what's happening in Spain to these poor dogs, and to bring dogs to the United States to people who are waiting for them. Basically, a lot of greyhound adopters were some of my first adopters. And we started working with adoption, transport. I learned the ropes back in about 2009. And I did my very own transport in 2009. All by myself. I pulled it all together, and I brought four dogs from Spain myself. I traveled to Spain about twice a year, depending. And, the idea was to raise awareness with every dog that comes. We call it an ambassador dog, and that dog spreads the story of the Galgos and the Pedincos, which is a whole other issue. But in any case, that's what we did. But with my new group, the focus has always been not just on adoptions, it's helping the shelters in Spain. So I have maintained a wonderful relationship with a handful of shelters, people that I've met personally. I've gone to Spain, I've spent time with them, I've gone to their shelters, I watch rescues, I go with them, we've done trapping of Galgos and Pedincos, we've, done a lot of different things together, and just the day-to-day operations of these shelters that run on virtually zero money from the Spanish government or anybody, other than they work solely on the donations of people abroad. So I saw a huge need to raise funds for these shelters. I mean, you see, they're bare-bones shelters. It's not like, here that you have, so many donors and you have associations that help and FPCA and all of that. There's nothing, especially when I started. I mean, rarely did people even hear about the situation in Spain. So I decided that was going to be really the focus of the group, was to help the shelters in Spain, because they are on the front line to me, they are my heroes. They're the people who pick up the broken bodies off the roads, to go to the kill stations and pull out emaciated galgos and treat them from all kinds of illnesses because they've never been vaccinated. I mean, broken bones, marks on their necks from being hung, just total situations that are just lamentable. And so that's kind of been my focus, and that's what we've been doing, trying to raise funds through our medical assistance fund and also other projects that we've started since I began, which we'll be talking about.
Let me ask you this, because I've heard this, I've heard this phrase a couple of times. I have an idea of what it means, but I'm not completely sure, and I'm probably going to regret asking, but I'll ask anyway. What is a kill station?
A kill station, it's called a bajera in Spain, and it's where recently, the hunters now take their dogs, unwanted dogs, to the kill station. What they do there is they hold them for a certain amount of time. If nobody claims them, then they're killed. So they're put to sleep or, that's it. I mean, I've gone to kill stations where they'll have dogs available for adoption, but who comes to look at those dogs? Other hunters. I mean, I saved a pudinka that a hunter was eyeing for breeding, and I knew what he was doing, and the shelter person said to me, if you're interested in that dog, you better take her because the hunter's going to take her for breeding for the rest of her life. And I went, oh my God. So I went, okay. So I said, I'll take her. And we saved her. We got her out of there.
Yeah.
But there's so many others. When they have some of them outside and you could see them in kennels. And, there's all kinds of mixes too. There's not just galgos and pedincos. There's all kinds of mixes like Mastines, which is the national dog of Spain. It almost looks like a big mastiff. They're called Mastines, so they're wonderful dogs. We brought some of those to the United States as well. Broncos, which are like pointers, water dogs like from Portugal. There's all kinds of mixes. And actually, that goes to say why galgos seem to get along great with all breeds, because the way they've been raised and where they ended up, they've always been around many different types of dogs. Not just like greyhounds. Like the greyhounds and the greyhound racing, they're just with greyhounds all the time, and so they're not quite as able to maybe blend in with other breeds, but galgos do. So anyway, kill station is where to go. If nobody claims them, they're euthanized.
Got
sometimes,
it.
I guess years ago, not a nice way at all. Now, supposedly, they're doing it more humanely. I don't know. I really don't know about that. But when I was there, I saw the dogs on the outside, and then I said to the lady, do you have any other pedincos? And she said, oh, yeah. She points at a gate and says, over there, behind that gate, I have 100. I have 100 of them right there. I just didn't believe it. And actually, that's the kill station in Malaga that I pulled my first little pedinca from, my little Evie. I pulled her from that kill station.
Yeah.
So basically, that's the last place for them to go. Now the hunters are all proud of themselves these days because now they take them there. They wash the blood off their hands when they don't want their dogs anymore. And somebody will adopt them from the kill station, along with 10,000 other dogs. Right.
Right.
So, that's another one of their lies and their misconceptions of what's going on.
Tell them if I can interject. I think you and I may have been looking at the same video at the same time or the same pictures at the same time. My introduction to what was happening to the galgos in Spain was back in, I think it was in the 90s. And it was actually someone called Scotty Devins from Save the Greyhound Dogs. I had gotten in contact with her because I wanted to become active in, working with Greyhound Rescue. And she had a video that someone had taken out of Spain about what was happening to the galgos. And again, like you, I was just outraged. I was horrified. It was just, once you see it, it's just something you can't unsee. And it's just something you can't forget. And one thing that I have often said to anybody who gets involved in rescue on any level is that, you're one of the bravest people that I know because, you're looking this monster right in the eye. And this is a scary monster. It's a big monster, and it's not something that we can make go away overnight and without a lot of effort. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for everything that you are doing, for not turning away, and, of course, for letting me assist. I hand the microphone back to you, Thelma.
Well, yeah. I'll take that microphone.
There you go.
It takes people who have a heart to help these dogs that are not in our own country, and that's a question that's always been raised. You know, why do you have to bring dogs from another country when there's so many here that need help? And I always say, you know, we all have a mission in life. You know, some of us mm-hmm. work with greyhounds, some of us work with beagles, some of us work sure. with cats. You know, but you know, when your heart is pulled in a direction, I think, you know, you go for it. And
yep.
they needed the help. But way back when I started, there was only one group that was helping the Galgo situation in Spain. So, you know, I felt like, okay, you look at all these greyhound groups, they have so much help, they have so many volunteers, they have, you know, fundraising, they have all this, but these people have nothing. And
yeah.
it was really, really sad to see, you know, how hard it was for the people in Spain that rescue these dogs. And it takes a toll. I'm over here in California on my computer 24/7, you know, working to help these shelters, to bring these dogs and set up transports and do all that. But these people, they're doing that. Plus, they have to see those dogs in the condition they come in, you know, and not just able to help them. Many of them, they don't make it. You know, for all the effort and all everything they can do to save a dog, it doesn't mean every dog is going to make it. And that's hard, you know. And this has been going on for so many years. But I guess what I want to say, too, is that for people who have never heard about the situation in Spain, you know, it's a byproduct of the hunting situation in Spain. There's a federation of hunters, and they use galgos to hunt, not to eat. They use them to hunt just for sport.
Yeah, you know, Thelma, I just learned that from you. I had asked.
Yes.
I was under the misconception that the hunting was being done for rabbit for food.
No,
telling me that it's almost, it seems almost akin to the competition that you will see in the greyhound racing in the United States. Would you compare?
Yeah, it's a sport that is meant just to gratify man, to make money, and to use the dogs just as a tool. And I think I said this to you before, you know, these dogs don't have any rights in the country, animal rights for hunting dogs. Domestic dogs have rights under law, but hunting dogs are considered a tool. So
there's no protection for them.
Put the dog away in a shed and tie it up, leave it in the shed with none of the basic necessities that you would give even a dog in a shelter. And so, they're just looked at like a commodity that can be easily disposed of and unfortunately killed in very inhumane ways. It's still happening. The Federation of Hunters want people to think that they treat their dogs well. Well, I'm sorry, I know that they don't. They raise them just for one purpose, and that's to hopefully get the champion galgo in Spain, the best hunter, and you know they can make up to $60,000 if their dog wins. And that brings me to another idea: all the dogs that don't win, what happens to them? Well, everything that I've spoken about—they end up in kill stations, abandoned on the roads. They throw them down wells. Unfortunately, some of them are hung. Things like that. So, all those dogs that don't make it, they're left to the rescue people in Spain to clean up their mess.
Very familiar story.
Yeah. Thelma, may I ask a question about animal protection laws in Spain? Now, you're telling me that the animal that you will find is a pet, the dog that you will find is a pet, there are animal protection laws for them. However, these laws do not pertain to the Galgo. Is the Galgo excluded by breed, or is the Galgo excluded because it's a hunting dog? How is the exclusion listed?
Well, any hunting dog is qualified under that title of hunting. So it could be a Galgo. It's definitely the Dingoes, Galgos, Brachos, which are like pointers. Those are hunting dogs.
Okay.
And there might be Bodeguedos. They hunt rats. They're little tiny, like Jack Russell kind of dogs. Those are also considered hunting dogs. So, yeah, those are the dogs that
excluded
are not covered under animal
hunting
protection laws.
Okay.
And they're the ones that you see a lot of in the shelters and the kill stations. So, yeah, that's the situation with them. And unfortunately, even the National Dog of Spain, which is called a Mastín, they're almost the big, big dogs, and they look kind of like mastiffs. You can envision that. Oh, wonderful personalities. They're guard dogs. They're used to guard a ranch. A fame is what we call it.
Big dogs. I've carried a few through security. Yes, heavy.
Yeah, security. right. Security. And they're great guard dogs. In fact, our shelter that we work with in Malaga, Galgos en Familia, they always have two Mastines on their land, and they stay in their big pen during the day, a big, you know, turnout area. They just sleep during the day. And then at night, when all the Galgos are put away, they let the Mastines out to roam around and guard.
Wow.
Yeah, until they get adopted, and then they'll be able to take two more from a kill station. You know? Mm-hmm. So that's really great. They're able to do that, you know. Okay. So those poor dogs, even though they're listed up like the National Dog of Spain, you find them in kill stations. You find them on roadways. You find them, you know, abandoned puppies. I mean, So that's kind of where the hunting situation is. Over 50,000 Galgos are banded every year. If you can get your head around that number.
In
some states, even more than
That's huge.
I was going to bring up what happened this year. I think I mentioned it to you about the disease with the rabbit, the hares.
Yes.
Last year, actually 2018, they started finding hares dead in the countryside. And, of course, that raised the red flag because there's something, a disease called...
Myxomatosis. Mm-hmm. Yep. Don't think I didn't Google that. It's like saying Galapagos.
It's a virus. It's a virus that hares catch, and it started spreading, and it spread all over Spain at one autonomous area after another, all the way from the south of Spain all the way to the north of Spain. And so they had to cancel all hunting this season, this last season, which starts in November through February, and because the hares have this disease and they can't hunt the hares anymore. So what happened is because they had to do that and the hunters had all these dogs, I mean, you know, 50,000 dogs divided amongst all these hunting federations, what did they do with them? They didn't want to keep 20 dogs for a year or 2 years until this disease is controlled. So that meant getting rid of them. So this year there was an onslaught of Galgos everywhere. You know, every shelter is full to the brim with Galgos. They're in kill stations. They're on the roads. They're in the mountainside. They're everywhere because hunters didn't want to feed their dogs for another year. And so that's what happened this year with the hares. I don't know how long that's going to last. The last thing I read is that now supposedly the hare disease has jumped to England. I just read that yesterday. And, you know, they're worried too, you know, that the hare population will get wiped out. So in one sense, it was good for maybe future Galgos. Maybe they won't be breeding more because they won't be able to use them to hunt. Or, but for the ones that are right now with the hunters or wanting, they're trying to get rid of them.
Yeah,
they don't want them.
That tsunami of Galgos. Thelma, I do want to ask you this. Since you are someone that I consider to be an expert on Galgo, This is what I wanted to really have you solve the mystery for us. As we're speaking of, yes, as we're speaking of the Galgo, in my head, of course, I'm thinking of Greyhound. Until I met you, I honestly thought that a Galgo was a Greyhound. And I know that you have told me that there has been some interbreeding with Galgo and Greyhound, but they are indeed not the same dog, despite my untrained eye thinking that they are. Can you tell us what is, absolutely finally and mystery solved, what is the difference between a Greyhound and a Galgo?
Right, and added to that, you often hear somebody say a Galgo is a Spanish Greyhound.
Yes.
Which to me is kind of confusing because I don't think they quite are.
They aren't Greyhounds. It's a different breed. They come from two different parts of the world, and they are sighthounds, but they come from North Africa, and they were brought over, they believe they were brought over by the Phoenicians across the Iberian Peninsula to Spain, centuries ago, and they were used for, hunting, and so they have a total different background, come from a different part of the world, and they also look different. I told you before that, if you look closely at a Galgo, at first you could think, oh, that's a Greyhound. But then when you look close, a true Galgo Español has the deeper chest from the side. If you look at him from the side, and then he's got like a nice curve that goes into a smaller waist, and then his tail is like a beautiful whip tail, and the head is more elongated. Some of them really have more of a Roman nose, and then they have the little ears that flap over like little leaves on the top of their heads. Are so cute.
Devil horns.
So, if you look at them, they look different. And another little thing I wanted to say is that some people say, how come they always look sad? And you know what? In Spain, they have a saying. They said that the Galgo is the sad-looking dog. And it's not that they're sad. I mean, when they're in Spain and they're with the hunters and with the gypsies and all that, yeah, they're sad. But once you get them home and stuff, they have this look, and it's kind of a sad look. And it's known in Spain. They call them the dogs with the sad look. But they're not sad when they're here. They're happy.
No. So, I think I've always thought they look soulful. Soulful, and when you do see one play, it is rather, it's really
and
something.
I wanted to talk about that. I think you might want to know what makes a Galgo different than a Greyhound. Galgos, just like any dog, or like Greyhounds, they all have their own special little personality, but, within the breed, there are certain things that once they are home and they're stable and secure, their personalities really start to emerge. And like I was telling you before, I said they're known as, like, a way to think about them is the Greyhound's crazy cousin. So that's what we always used to say about the Galgo, because they are very different. They're more animated. Once they're in a home and feel comfortable and are happy, they're very animated. They're playful, very playful. They play a little different than Greyhounds as well. They're more agile. They jump around and they twist and they turn. And, that's what they did in the field. They're very good at endurance and making sharp turns and all that. So they're very agile. But like Greyhounds, they have all the wonderful qualities of a companion dog. So in the home, they're absolutely wonderful. They're loving. They're sweet. They're very clever. They also have a very noble presence about them. They love attention. And, they just make great companions. And they also love the couch, and they do like to sleep like Greyhounds. Another thing that I just came into my mind when I was at a event with Dr. Picteau, I remember he was talking about the Galgos, and he said, another good thing about the Galgos is that they don't suffer as far as we know now, with the research that they've done in the amounts of galgos that have been in the United States, they're not suffering from the osteosarcoma like the gals or the greyhounds.
That was a question I was going to ask. The cancer in our greyhounds, of course, is, you know, at times just very high. Other forms of cancer that you're not going to see in many breeds of dogs. With the galgos, however, you are saying that you are not seeing the cancer that you are seeing in the greyhound community.
No, it's rare. I think in the last 10 years, I think I've only heard about two galgos that actually had osteosarcoma, and that was rarity. So, yeah, you know, every animal is going to, you know, have some issue that's going to bring the end of their life, but it's not like a mass thing like the poor greyhounds with the osteosarcoma cancer. So, Dr. Cattell even said, you know, if you want a healthier sighthound, think about the galgo. He said that in one of his talks, and I was like, oh,
wow.
Man.
And they have a longer life expectancy, too, don't they, than a greyhound?
Well, it seems like they do. You know, it seems like, well, my little Luna, I got her in 2005. She was already almost 2 years old. She lived to be 14.
Okay.
And she was healthy until the very end. I mean, she was, like, playful still at 14. I mean, just amazing. So it seems that I think it's the breed. It is the breed. It is because they are... just a more hardy breed, and they just seem to do really well. I mean, like I said, you know, we're just starting to see, you know, a decade go by, and people are starting to lose their galgos or their pedincos. But you know, it's as far as an illness that, you know, kind of is overwhelming for the breed, there isn't one that we know of right now.
And Thelma, one quick question before we move on to some of the projects that you have going on. You know, as we're seeing things shift in greyhound racing, we're seeing less dogs available for adoption. And we see the people who do love the sighthound and who do love the greyhound considering the galgo. What is something that you would say to a greyhound owner who is now saying, you know, I may decide that my next dog somewhere down the road could be a galgo? What would you say to that prospective adopter who's considering a galgo?
I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And there are so many dogs that need homes in Spain and are waiting, you know, and many, many dogs are being adopted in Europe, and people absolutely adore their galgos. I would say the galgo is going to bring you a lot of joy and happiness. And, of course, you know, like any dog, they need time to settle into a routine because they haven't lived in a home before, unless you're fortunate enough to have one that has been in a foster home in Spain. And there are some that have been in foster that I've brought. So that's a great stepping stone for some dogs and for some adopters. But if you have had a greyhound, it's not, you know, that big of a jump. It's not like, you know, there's still a dog that needs the same safety concerns as a greyhound, you know. You need a 6-foot fence. You need to have them leashed, you know, and they need exercise, but not any more than your typical greyhound. I mean, it's nice to have a yard so they can play. But one thing I do suggest, and this is my own personal opinion, I rarely would place a galgo totally by himself if people work, because these dogs were born and raised in a pack, and the pack dynamic to them is what got them through to survive the life they had to live. So they are very bonded to each other, these dogs, and they do so much better if there's, even if it's another greyhound or another breed, because like I said, they do well with other breeds because they're used to other dogs being in a pack with them. But I prefer, and unless the person is retired and is home all day long, and you know, you give them that one-on-one, that's great too, or somebody that works from home, that's great too. But a dog like a galgo does not do well being left by itself and people work, you know, 8-10 hours a day. That is not, I don't think that's the right thing to do for a Galgo.
Let me ask you this, Tommy, because you had mentioned how, you know, the 6-foot fence. So I know there are many greyhound rescue groups in the States that don't require any fence at all. As a matter of fact, a lot of rescue groups say, you know, they make greyhounds make great apartment dogs. So we know a lot of people in cities where most of the people are in apartments. They will have, you know, they'll have a greyhound. But with Galgos, I know, including my former group, and some other rescue groups, require for the Galgos a 6-foot fence. Why is that?
Well, Galgos can do fine in a condo or, you know, a townhome, that kind of thing, in the city. Certain ones, they have to be tested, though, because not all Galgos will do well with that kind of activity in the city. You know, a lot of them are very sensitive to sound because of the hunting and all that. Some dogs just don't do well. They'll melt down in the city. Others do great. We have some that have come to GG, Grateful Greyhounds, that are living in the city. And a friend of mine, Jessie Denise, she has 4 Galgos in the city. And they have a small little patio, but she walks them. She walks them all the time. And so, you know, a 6-foot fence is if you have a yard and you're going to let your dog out after they know that they live there. I always say, you know, don't let them off the leash unless, you know, for a good week, 2 weeks, until they really know, you know, that this is home. They're not going to try to jump the fence. A Galgo can jump a 6-foot fence if it wants to.
Did you say it can, right? It can.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. They can. So, but few do. I mean, I think since I started, maybe I've heard of one Galgo who's actually jumped a 6-foot fence here. And it was a puppy, and it was because the lady left, and he wanted to follow her. He wasn't trying to get away, but he did. And so they're very agile. Like I said, they're not like greyhounds. You know, in a home, a greyhound, you put up a 3-foot baby gate, and they come up to it, and they'll stop.
Right.
Like, now what do I do? You know,
Well, I'm thinking of our friend, Ellen and I have a friend named Denise, who has a Galgo, and she ended up putting one baby gate on top of another.
Yes.
And the Galgo still got through.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was
funny.
And
that goes for the taller Pedincos, too. I would say you need a 6-foot fence. At least 5 feet for a small Pedinco. I have a 6-foot fence for my small Pedincos, and I have a medium-sized Pedinco, too. They can't get over it. So.
Okay, and one thing, Thelma, if you can clarify. Now, if you're somebody that doesn't have a yard, and basically a greyhound, we do have greyhound people that have no yard, and they walk.
Right.
You could certainly adopt a Galgo if you were going to always leash walk, correct?
Always, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so you don't...
But, you know, you really have to have people that are willing to do that. And I don't mean like once a week. You've got to walk your dog. I'm just totally, you know, that's one of my pet peeves. You've got to walk your dog, especially if they don't have a yard. And at least two times a day, you know, good brisk walk. And then they love to be in home in comfort. They like their new comfortable life. They're off bed, you know, the attention and all that. But yes, you need to walk them. And, you know, some people don't like dog parks. I don't recommend them really for Galgos.
No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah, not a fan.
I don't recommend them for anybody, but especially Galgos and Greyhounds for several reasons.
Yeah, especially. Now, I used to take my Pedincos to a dog park that was, it was segregated, and it was, you know, the fencing was high and people weren't there during the week at a certain time. They loved it, you know, but it's not for everybody. I wouldn't suggest that really for a greyhound. But take them on hikes, take them on walks, take them, you know, give them a routine. That's what the Galgos need. You know, a lot of them are just brand new. You know, they've gone from the street to a shelter and then on a trip across the ocean with Ellen and then into a foster home or directly into the home. They're like, whoa, what hit me, you know? But They do great. They really do. Just you have to give them time to adjust, a little settling in period, but they do great.
And then, they're... And Thelma, are they... So... I have heard, and maybe you can dispel the myth or tell me it's right, that they have galgos have a much higher energy level than a greyhound. Is that true?
I think that they can have a very high energy level, especially if they're very young. But like I said, if you give them proper exercise, then, you know, it gets it out of your system, a good brisk walk, and then they're fine in the home, you know? So, and remember, they're long-distance runners,
yep.
Not sprinters.
Like the Greyhound, right.
So, like the Greyhound. He's done, you know?
How do they do with, I guess in general, you know, and I know not all of them are going to be the same, but are there galgos who are good with small dogs and with cats and even kids?
Yes, absolutely. But again, you know, they need to be tested with cats,
yep.
Of course, just like the greyhounds.
Yep.
Some galgos do great with cats, amazingly, and some don't. And so you need to test them, and like, you know, all greyhound adopters know, even if you have a cat and a dog that's been tested, you still take all the precautions.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yep.
So...
I always say there's no such thing as cat safe, right? There's cat tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But
there are some that are cat safe, and then, you know, when they go into a group and into a foster home, they can cat test them again.
Yep.
But, you just have to take precautions. And even if the dog seems cat safe, you know, you have to take precautions. Because remember, it's still a dog. And it's still a hunting dog.
That's
so
right.
If something
right.
runs across the yard, then it's fair game. I mean, that dog, even if it's a cat, knows. It's like a greyhound. If the cat gets outside and starts running across the yard,
yep.
the dog will chase it.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep. Outside,
yep.
all bets are off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I have some Tadinkos that are doing great with cats and others that did not do well from day one, and we thought they were cat-based. So... You know, again, it's each dog is an individual. Each one you have to test. Each one you have to watch. You have to, evaluate them.
Now, tell me, is there galgo racing in Spain? Like, there's some countries have greyhound racing.
There used to be in Barcelona. There was a track, and that's when they brought dogs from I think the UK and Ireland. And they bred them with the galgos because they wanted faster sprinters. Because the galgo is an endurance runner, they wanted. So they thought in their thinking, misguided thinking, they thought if they put them together, they could breed them a faster dog. So what happened is that track finally closed. This was a long time ago. It finally closed, but then the galgo espanol was mixed with the greyhound. So now, you will see some galgos that don't fit the description that I gave you about the galgo espanol. They'll look more like greyhounds.
Oh, wow.
And there's a few, actually, at the shelter that we pulled some of our males from the male galgo project. And they even called the dog, the hunter called the dog, he turned the dog into them, and he called the dog a galgo inglés. Inglés in Spanish means English. So he was calling his dog an English galgo, and he looked like one. He looked like a greyhound. So yeah, they bred them, they brought them there. Don't ask me how that happened, but I think somebody has money. I think there's some scrupulous people who will sell greyhounds anywhere, won't they?
Got it. I wanna. Switch gears a little bit because I know that right now your organization has a fundraising campaign going on for something that's dear to my heart, and that is the adoption of male galgos and pedancos. Now I know here in the States we have seen in my experience you know, as working for, volunteering for a Greyhound rescue group, and just listening to, what would we call them, our friends from other mm-hmm. Greyhound rescue groups, that most adopt, or I shouldn't say most, a good portion of adopters want the girls. For some reason, they really want the girls, and a lot of them aren't interested in adopting boys. Like, I think there's misconceptions about boys. Well, I know there's misconceptions about boys. Personally, I love the boys. Love the boys. The bigger, the better.
I love the big boys, too. And it's funny. I can give you two reasons that I've heard. One reason that I heard was that boys lift their legs, girls squat. So if there's going to be an accident in the house, it's not going to get the furniture. And the other concern that some people have with the Greyhound being a large breed dog is that it's too much dog for them to handle on a lead.
Right.
But how does this translate over into Galgo world? Well, yeah. Let Jacqueline ask that question a little better, maybe.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's such a problem as far as the males getting adopted, that I know the Greyhound Trust in England a couple of years ago actually had a huge campaign about getting male Greyhounds adopted. They even did a partnership with Alan Jay, who is a well-known pop singer in the UK, to put out a song to raise funds for helping the boys and getting the word out about the boys. As a matter of fact, I interviewed Alan. Alan was one of my first interviews on this podcast.
Yep.
You know, I've talked at length on this show at least a couple of times about the boys. And it turns out, no surprise to, I think, most of us, that the girl Galgos and Pedenkos are also getting adopted over the boy Galgos and Pedenkos. Yeah. So can you tell me about your campaign to help drive awareness and the program that you're working on now and need to get funding for?
So the Galgos are getting adopted in Spain, are chosen, the dogs that are adoptable in Spain are the dogs that are already in a shelter. Okay, they've been rescued, they've been rehabilitated by the shelter, and then they are prepared to be adopted. So the shelters have Galgos that come in. Galgos have been there for a while, Galgos have been there a long time. Okay, it seems that when Galgos come in, it seems like for the shelters are going to look for dogs or whatever. No, not the shelters, I'm sorry. The people that are adopting from the shelters, it seems just like they prefer females. It's just the same as the Greyhound world, I think. You know, they just think, oh, it'll be easier maybe.
Right.
A little girl, maybe the size. But, you know, Galgos are small. So, like, a little female is like a small male is like the size of a small, or a male Galgo Espanol looks like the size of a medium-sized Greyhound. And the female, some females are really tiny.
Peanuts,
so,
so tiny.
I think people think, oh, they're smaller, they're easier to handle. Maybe the thing about, you know, they squat. But, of course, you can train a dog to go outside. You know, you have to use a belly band, maybe at first or whatever, if that's something that you do. But I know a lot of people do that up in Canada. When they first come into a home, they just slap a little belly band on them until they teach them to go out, you know, on the routine, and they learn fast. But I think that I'll tell you, the male Galgos are the most sweetest, loving, silly goofuses that you can imagine.
Right.
They're wonderful.
They sure
are. They're just wonderful. And so what we saw over and over is that there were so many more females in the shelters. And so we started thinking, Tanya Schmidt from Extraordinary Galgos and Pedenkos and I were talking once, and we said, at this one shelter where we pull we pull most of our males from the Male Galgo Project. It's a very bare-bones shelter called La Guarida. And it's a rough place because, I mean, they have three people dealing with, like, 300 dogs, taking care of 300 dogs. It's very difficult. So, and she cannot turn a dog that needs help. She can't turn the dog away, so she ends up with so many dogs. And so many of those were males. And then what we were seeing, we go to Spain twice a year or whatever, we seen the same dog still there. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's been here 6 months. He's been here a year. Why won't anyone take him? He's just gorgeous. He's poor dog. And they do so bad in those big shelters. They just, you know, you can imagine putting a greyhound in a shelter with 300 dogs just loose. You know, they're skinny and they have to lay on the concrete, and it's just sad. So we were talking, and we said maybe we could help a few of these males get out of here and put them in a residency to get them prepared for their new life. And so then I talked to Lisa Sally of Big Bull Greyhounds, and so Lisa, Tanya, and myself decided to start a little campaign to help these males get out of these shelters, because the males have been languishing there for a long time. And in order for us to do that, we needed somewhere to put them, because we couldn't bring them into the shelters that already are filled, okay? So we had to work with Galgos and Familia, great group in Malaga, who I've known, probably the first group I really started working with, you know, 15 years ago, 10, 15 years, whatever it was. And we said, okay, we need somewhere to put these dogs. So they have helped us find residencies, which are like boarding kennels that are very nice, clean. There's always somebody there. They have beds. They have blankets. They get fed twice a day, fresh water. They live in a pack. You know, they're in and out with the other dogs. You know, they recover at these residencies. So we've used three different residencies since we started the program. And I'm telling you, the residencies are just wonderful. I just went there in May to visit the two newest residencies we have for the males from the Male Galgo Project. And they really recover there. It's peaceful. It's got a country setting. Mm. They're given a lot of attention and touched and loved. And, you know, they get used to people. They get used to men. They, you know, all the things that they didn't have before they have at the residency. And then once they're, you know, settled in, and, you know, they all of a sudden their personalities start coming out. It mm-hmm. doesn't take long mm-hmm. for these galgos to know a good thing. And they get happy, and they get, you know, their personalities change and everything. Mm. And then from those dogs, basically Grateful Greyhounds and Tanya's group and another group in Belgium, Offer Dogs, they choose dogs from amongst the Male Galgo Project. So we have been able to keep turning dogs over since November 2017. We have moved 65 dogs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, wow. Out of La Guarita into these residencies. And not just La Guarita, we've also taken some dogs from a wait list that Galgo de Familia has, from hunters that have told them they were going to kill this galgo if they didn't take the galgo. So they just say to him, can you please just hold on to this dog for 1 month and we'll have a spot for him. And sometimes these hunters will do that, which is amazing. And if they don't, well, they'll take them anywhere and find somewhere to put the dog. But we've been able to rescue dogs from hunters that same way into our Male Galgo Project. Wow. So we're very happy that we had this vision to help these dogs, because we have been able to help them. And we keep moving them. I mean, they keep going to Canada and coming to the United States.
Nice.
And to Belgium. And, so it costs money. So
of course.
This is the thing. It costs us about $140 per dog just to move the dog into the temporary residency. They have to get vetted. They have to be spayed, neutered, blood tested, which they all are, and vaccinated and all of that, and fed, and then we have to pay the residencies for boarding.
I do have a question. So the $140, is that for the vetting, or is the vetting on top of the $140?
No, the vetting is on top of the $140. So the $140 covers the residency and their food. And then the rest of it, you know, when they adopt dogs out, they get a adoption fee, and that will cover their vetting. And usually it doesn't even cover the vetting. I mean, a lot of these dogs need treatment for Ehrlichia, a tick-borne disease, or you know, another kind of disease, or, you know, injuries and wound care and, you know, different things like that. So, no, $140 just gives them time. It saves them from being at that overcrowded shelter so that they can get their health back.
Right.
Oh, my God, this year there was 10 galgos that we pulled from La Guarita who were, oh my gosh, they got these dogs out of this man's shack, and these dogs were like walking skeletons. You could not believe how skinny these dogs, emaciated, and just horrific condition. So, of course, those dogs took a lot more care, and, you know, we did some fundraising for them, too, so that they could cover the medical expenses that they needed to get them, you know, able to get well and then eventually get placed. But, you know, it just doesn't end. It's, but at least we're doing that. Okay, our thing is, Galgo Pedinco support is one dog at a time, because my vision has always been, if I start to focus on the 50,000, I'll be paralyzed. I can't do anything.
Right.
So what I need to do is just, you know, the dogs that are in our realm that we can help, you know, just keep plugging along, raising funds, trying to help them, and then, you know, the reward is the pictures of the dogs, and we're home. Just like, all rescue people want that, right?
And if I could just interrupt for a second, Thelma, yes, I have been fortunate enough to transport some of the dogs that I've seen the photos of in their original state. And it, when you say a walking skeleton, that is absolutely accurate. And then to see the dog, meeting the dog at the airport after all of the work, all of the care, all of the, you know, everything that's gone into rehabilitating the dog, it is just absolutely amazing. The work that the people do there, the support that you get for these dogs that go into the Male Galgo Project, it's just, I honestly have to say, I think it is just one of the best programs that I've seen around for that specific need. And I'm hoping that you're going to tell people a little bit more about what your goals are this year for the Male Galgo Project, and what we can expect to see from you regarding it online.
Yes, I am so excited and so thankful to both of you ladies for coming alongside of us to give us a hand. GTS has been funding, sharing the fundraising for the Male Galgo Project since November 2017. And like all groups, you know, we need to fundraise to keep things going. So, thankfully, Ellen has come up with a great idea, along with Jackie, who's been doing this already for other groups, to help us so that we can keep this going for a year. That would take a huge load off of my mind, knowing that, you know, we'll have enough money for 1 year to keep. We have typically about 10 to 11 dogs in the program at any given time. So every time we get down, three get adopted, then we take three more. So we typically always have five in one residency and five in another. So that's how we just keep it going. So this fundraiser that we're so excited about is going to give us an opportunity to fundraise in many different ways under one platform. And I am so excited because you guys have it down. You know what you're doing with this. And I'm going to promote it because this is how we save dogs. This is the bottom line, that we need funds.
Tell us what your goal is. 8,400.
My goal for 1 year, I would set it at $8,400.
Okay.
That would be my share. The other groups, they're giving their share. That this is for Galgo Pedinco support, so that I can continue to be part of the program, because I need that money to be part of the program. So that we started. And we don't want to cut back on dogs. That's the other thing. We don't want to have to say no when the rescue say to us, three dogs have been adopted. Can you take these two? Oh, please. They've been, you know, with this hunter. They need to come. And I'm like, oh, okay, okay. You know, we can take two more, you know. So, and that's only because we have fun. So that's what we need. We need $8,400 to be raised so that we're, those dogs will be secured for a year.
So we're recording this on July 3rd. When do you need that? Do you have a timeline for your reaching that goal?
Well, we were talking about maybe running this campaign for a couple of months.
Okay.
July, August, maybe into mid September.
Okay.
We're hoping that that it'll get steam and we'll have those funds, because again, if we can accomplish that, then we have other things that we want to talk to you about that are big needs. So, and it's fun. You know, I think people will really love it. We're planning on a raffle with a really neat raffle prize. Can I talk about it now?
Of course you can.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's nice.
Okay. There's a famous artist, I should say, in Spain named Carmen Osorio. And she's been known for, she has this really whimsical style. And she will take a picture, a photograph of a Balbo, and then she'll make a beautiful painting out of it. And she's been doing this for, maybe 20 years. In fact, she had a showing a lot, maybe 15 years ago in New York, and she sold a lot of her paintings. And in fact, I have two of her paintings now. But she also paints to help rescue. So it's, you know, she has donated some paintings to us so that we can put them in raffles or auctions or whatever. And, you know, they do really well. And it's a special, special painting because the lady who does it has a heart for rescue. And they're just gorgeous. I mean,
they are very beautiful.
So do you have a, is there a start date for the raffle?
When will we going to start this out?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. You're putting poor Telma on the spot.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So I know, Telma, you have a website, which we will put into the show notes of this episode so people can go there. I know that you have a Facebook page for Galgo Pateco Support. And I know that Ellen just launched for you a brand new... am I stealing your thunder, Ellen?
I think so.
No.
Please, no, please. Take my thunder and my lightning.
Okay, I'll take them both anytime. So Ellen had just launched and is starting to build out a Facebook fundraising group for Galgo Pateco Support.
Yes.
So information.
That's what I was
going to
say.
Absolutely. Yes. You can join. If you're interested in supporting Telma and the incredible good works that she and the shelters in Spain are doing for the Galgos, the crazy cousin of the Greyhound, our fundraising page is Galgo Pateco Support Fundraising. Again, Galgo Pateco Support Fundraising on Facebook. There's going to be some wonderful raffles. We have a t-shirt campaign coming up. We've got some flash sales. We've got general donations, you know, and there's lots of ways that you can help. All that we ask is that, you know, you come by, take a look, see if you'd like to get involved. And if you have any fundraising offers, ideas, I absolutely would love to hear them because, you know, it's with the support of the wonderful people that I think that all three of us can say that we've met along this endless road of rescue.
Right.
That these dogs are, this is real rescue. I mean, these are dogs who otherwise without us are not going to make it. So it's very appreciated, and certainly all that Telma is doing. Let's help her reach her goal, $8,400 by September 15th. Check out the raffles, the upcoming sales, and anything else you'd like to say about that, Telma?
Well, I will keep promoting it on my own Facebook page, which seems like so many people just go to my Facebook page. Is that we also have the GPS Facebook page, so we'll put it up there. If you have any questions, you can ask me, ask Alan. This is a whole new thing for me. I'm just so thankful and grateful that you ladies have come alongside of us to help me because, we need help. And the dogs need help. I mean, that's the bottom line. They're the ones that need the help. And let's not forget about the Pateco's too. So
if
the Greyhound has a crazy cousin, then the Galgo has a crazy cousin.
Yeah, and Jacqueline, thank you so much for, you know, taking a look at this and, you know, letting Telma and I come and hijack your show.
That's quite all right. You know, I know.
I may hold you hostage for $8,400, and there we go.
I can tell you guys, well, Ellen, you probably know this. I'm not sure if Thelma knows this. This show is a little over 2 years old now. We're heard in over 46 countries. I can't remember the exact number. And
can you name them all?
I don't think I can name 46 countries, period. But we do, you know, we do have quite a following on this show. And I know, like I said, you know, it's a podcast about greyhounds. And in the States, I'm just talking about the United States right now, because greyhound racing is, in its final days.
It's on its decline.
It's on its way out in the States. There is a quote-unquote greyhound shortage, although I use that loosely and could go on and on about that. But I won't. And I know, you know, people who love their greyhounds are thinking, okay, you know, aside from buying an AKC greyhound or rescuing an AKC greyhound as opposed to an NGA greyhound, which is a racing greyhound, you know, what other sighthounds are there that I can help? And certainly on the short list are Galgos. You know, people have heard about them. I don't know that they know exactly what they are until now. And this, this wonderful tour, Thelma, that you have given us through, you know, the history of them, what's happening in Spain, and the rescue efforts that are underway. And I did mention at the top of the show some of the different groups, Thelma, that you're working with. If a greyhound adoption or rescue group in the States would like to partner with you or look into partnering with you on taking in Galgos, would they go through your Facebook page?
Well, they could talk to me, and that just raises another set of questions that I could better talk to them. I know many groups now are already bringing Galgos in, new greyhound groups that have never had Galgos.
Which
they don't
is
come through me. There's other good groups out there, Galgo rescue groups that have been around for a while in the Midwest and on the East Coast that have been bringing Galgos. For some reason, my rescue efforts have always kind of been more, not just Galgos, but the Bedingos. It just seems like I've become the Bedingo person.
Yes.
Because I love Bedingos as well as Galgos.
And we're sorry about that.
but again, another little thing that happened in the last few months is it's become a little more difficult for all of us to get through the, not just the transport issues, but the customs issues. And I know people are talking about that. So, but there's ways to work through that, and actually, Grateful Greyhounds has been great in brokering that and getting Ellen the import number that she needs in order to come in with the dogs, and so that seems to have gotten kind of straightened away. But again, it's costing us more money to bring dogs. So every time we use a broker, it's costing us to bring six dogs with Iberia Airlines from Madrid to New York. It's costing us an extra $400 or $500. So that's another idea that we think maybe in the future raise money to just cover that cost for the transport that we have, because you know that it's difficult and it's already cost you know quite a bit of money to bring these dogs. I mean, you have to pay adoption fees, crates, all their vetting. And the transport and the airline ticket.
And
So
Tom, I also want to bring something else up. Not every dog that comes into the shelters and the organizations that you work with in Spain are candidates to get on an airplane and come to the United States. Some of these dogs are going to need to be adopted out locally, and some of these dogs are going to spend quite some time in those shelters if they are not. What you are doing and the fundraising that you are doing is going to support these dogs who are living in the shelters. To give them a chance, to give them a chance at rehabilitation and to be adoptable. And what you're doing, I really look at, you know, you are like definitely the front line when it comes to, you know, fundraising for these dogs that are coming in that state, and just really whatever direction they're going to go, whether it's onto an airplane or into a home locally, you know, that money that you're raising is the catalyst for that. So thank you for that.
Right.
Yeah,
and you're welcome. And we're really trying to, you know, this year, like I told Ellen, I kind of switched gears a little bit. I've been doing this for a really long time and really doing all the transports and coordinating of, I think I placed like 175 thousands of potatoes, mainly potatoes, in the last 4 years.
Wow.
And that's a lot to transport. So Ellen knows. She's done 25 already. Yay! But it does take a toll on people. And so I was thinking, you know, another way I can help without, you know, totally devoting every minute of my life to this, although I've been doing this for many, many, many years, the fundraising end of it, because that's where the money needs to go so that these dogs can get rehabilitated and then sent to Europe or like even within Spain. Oh, and that's one other whole thing I wanted to say, if you don't mind. I wanted to say that a lot of good things have been changing in Spain, even though the hunting thing is still happening. But the amount of people in Spain and rescue groups and people who come alongside of those people has grown and grown and grown. And this week we saw a major bill being passed in the Spanish Senate that forbid the Torre de la Vega, which is a festival where they steer a bull to death. And it's horrific. It's been going on for 500 years, tradition. But guess what? Finally, after 10 years of fighting, PACMA and FITA actually have been able to get the law passed that they cannot do this anymore. All the people that support the end of bullfighting are also people who support the end of hunting with galgos, pitincos, and other breeds. So this is huge. Sure. I mean, 80% of the people in Spain are not for it. They are against it. Mm. And every year on February 1st, they have demonstrations all over Spain and all the cities in Spain, all the major cities and small cities everywhere. It's called, you know, the Dia del Galgo, the day of the greyhound, because the Galgo, because it's the last day of the hunt season. So every year it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I see there is a change. And that's why there are adoptions now happening in Spain more than there ever has been before. So they have a ways to go, but slowly, one dog at a time, they're making a difference. And that's my hope would be we would never have to bring galgos here.
Yep.
You know, my hope would be that they, all the dogs in Spain would end up in loving homes in Spain or in close proximity to Spain. And it could happen if they stopped breeding and breeding for hunting. So that's my hope and my prayer, really.
I think that's a great goal, Thelma.
Yeah, and just a couple things there. You know, we thought, or at least I thought for many years, that greyhound racing in the States wouldn't go away. It's almost gone. And and you're so right. It's, you know, one life at a time, and things will change. And a lot of that is not just through the fundraising, but in word of mouth and rallying people and driving awareness and educating, which is, you know, one of the reasons, you know, that I was especially happy to have you, Thelma, and you, Ellen, on the podcast talking about the specific issue. You know, change is possible. And I tell people all the time, like running a fundraising group for China dogs, you know, not everybody has the means to give money. But everybody has the ability to share and drive awareness. And, I've had people say to me, oh, I wish I could give more, or I wish I could give something, and they feel bad because they can't give more, can't give something. But they're doing so much, and I tell them that they don't even realize the impact they're making every time they tell the story either say the dogs in Spain or the dogs in China or wherever these injustices may be. It makes a huge difference, and you just spelled that out, Thelma, by talking about how the peaceful demonstrations are going in Spain at the end of hunting season. The other thing I want to touch on is something you said earlier, Thelma, and you had said when people question, well, there's so many dogs here, here being the U.S., why do you need to help these dogs in another country? Well, you know, when people say that to me about dogs that I'm trying to help, I say, you know, I may be an American, a proud American, but I'm also a citizen of the world. And wherever there's an injustice, and I can be the voice of one who doesn't have a voice and try to get the means for them to get the help that they need,
yes,
I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter to me. Like, there are no borders when it comes mm-hmm. to yeah. when it comes to
right.
rescue and giving help to someone in need. You know, like,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yes. And that's one of our slogans. Rescue has no borders.
Ah, that's
and
it. That,
have,
see?
Yeah.
I should be a marketing writer.
I've said it over and over when I speak at different events or whatever. I always say rescue has no borders. I mean, we
right.
help people in other parts of the world.
Right.
I mean, these are the helpless. They're the ones who need help, you
yeah.
know? So, you know, I think maybe people are starting to understand that now, also seeing what's going on in China with the poor greyhounds and,
yep.
and with the galgos. So,
yep.
Yeah, rescue has no borders.
I agree. So,
right.
Ellen, was there anything else that you wanted to...
I just want to tell Thelma, you know, it's been a pleasure working with you. And Thelma has a wicked sense of humor, though, you know. One time she did call me up. It was a weekend when I wasn't doing a transport. And she says, so are you getting ready for your flight? And it was late on a Friday afternoon. And, you know, it takes me about 5 hours to get into New York City, although it should only take me half an hour. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We were like, that's
not,
yeah,
that's not really
yeah,
what I thought.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, leave right now.
But, yeah, she can have a wicked sense of humor every once in a while for and keeping us transport folks on our toes, for sure. But I look forward to working with you as we go along. Go ahead. Sorry.
And I have to just add how thankful I am for Ellen and for her bubbly personality and her ability to sit on a plane completely quiet.
That's my superpower. Yeah.
Turn around, bring dogs back, and sit another 9 hours without moving on the plane.
Yes.
And so she has to run through the airport with a dog. So she has done an incredible job for us, and she's always there when we need her, and she's made it every single time. No major problems, yay, Ellen.
Yeah.
Well, that's her middle name. No
yeah.
problem, Ellen.
Yeah. No worries.
Yeah,
no worries.
Yeah, Ellen, no worries. I do want to let the audience know on our next episode, we have a special treat, which is my new nickname for you, Ellen.
Special treat.
Ellen, as we said, is going to be doing her 25th transport, soon followed by her 26th transport from Spain
Yay.
Into the U.S. And she is going to take us on a virtual trip to Spain and
yes.
back to New York with
mm-hmm.
her and take us through what does that look like, what are the logistics of that, like what really goes on behind the scenes in transport, and it's oh boy, and it's fascinating, and according to Thelma, really funny.
You say so.
Bonds people together when you work on transport, believe me.
Oh, yeah.
So, Thelma, thank you so much for being on to share your story. I will have in the show notes links to Thelma's website for Galgo Podenco Support, to Thelma's Facebook group page for Galgo Podenco Support, and to Ellen's new endeavor, which is the Galgo Podenco Support fundraising group on Facebook.
Yep.
And stay tuned to any one of those links. For information about this wonderful raffle that the folks have coming up, along with some other fundraisers that Ellen has up her sleeves. And, and again, the goal is $8,400 by September 15th.
That's it.
Which, as of this recording, is 2 months and 2 weeks away. Mm-hmm. And knowing Ellen and Thelma, knowing your reputation, I have no doubt you guys are going to get there. So
yay.
I'm really excited.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie, for everything, for putting this podcast together. I get free information on all the different issues that you talk about. And I really appreciate it. And thank you for allowing me the time to be here and to share with you guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It is our privilege and honor to have you on the show, Thelma. You are, whether you know or not, very well known for the work that you do, and I can't thank you enough for being on and sharing your story with the audience, who I'm sure are very curious.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you. So we'll be seeing you on Facebook, everybody.
Okay, so that wraps up this episode of the About Greyhounds podcast. And again, stay tuned for the next episode. We will be talking to Ellen about her transport exploits. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Bye.